Lux presents Hollywood. The Lux Radio Theater brings you Disputed Passage, starring Alan Ladd, Akeem Tamiroff, and Ann Richards. Ladies and gentlemen, your guest producer, Mr. Brian Ahern.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. One of the world's outstanding men of medicine, Sir William Osler, said at the peak of his career, "Nothing in life is more wonderful than fate. It is the one great moving force which we can neither weigh in the balance nor test in the crucible." Sir William was a man of fact and research, a tireless seeker after scientific truth. Yet he never ceased to admit the existence of forces greater than his scalpel could reveal. Tonight's Lux Radio Theater play disputes this passage, or rather puts it to the test in one of the screen's most moving stories, from Lloyd Douglas' great book, Disputed Passage. It comes to us from Paramount Studios, producers of the current Technicolor hit, Bring on the Girls. Among our stars tonight is Alan Ladd, who recently finished the Paramount picture, Salty O'Rourke, in which he goes back to the type of role that made him famous, the gun-toting, swashbuckling man of action. Co-starred with Alan tonight is the versatile character actor, Akeem Tamiroff. Also a newcomer to this stage, but for many years Australia's top film favorite, Miss Ann Richards. Disputed Passage takes its title from lines by a favorite American poet, Walt Whitman, who argued that wisdom could best be acquired through challenge and dispute instead of blind agreement or acceptance. And I think that goes for little things as well as big. Certainly we would rather you put Lux flakes to the test yourself than blindly accept whatever we may say about them. And I think it's because so many people have put Lux flakes to the test that today they are serving in so many homes, lightening household chores and helping families to take better care of the things they wear so that they'll last longer and look better too. And now here's the first act of Disputed Passage, starring Alan Ladd as John Bevan, Akeem Tamiroff as Dr. Foster, and Ann Richards as Audrey. Some 15 years ago, at one of our larger medical colleges, a group of new young students, nervously excited, file into their first class in surgery. They know the significance of the moment. It marks more than the start of their careers. It is their introduction to the almost legendary figure who will rule their lives for the next 4 years. Their teacher, Dr. Max Foster.
Well, what's the idea of keeping us waiting like this?
Don't worry. You see so much of Foster, you'll hate the sight of him.
Now, who said so?
Every guy who's ever studied under him. He's a sarcastic, egotistical heel, and I'm ducking the eminent Dr. Foster every chance I get.
He's still the greatest surgeon in the world.
Oh, you'll find out, Bevan. You'll find out.
Right down. Here he comes.
Sit down. Sit down. This is a classroom, not a ballpark. Well, for reasons known only to yourselves, you're elected to study the science of medicine. All right? But get this for your head. You are not different than any other class of beginners in any other medical school. Your own opinion to the contrary. At least 60% of you will prove so completely stupid that you will have to leave for the protection of the general public. Only in 10% of you will there be a meager evidence of superiority. It is to that 10% I now speak. From this small group will come the pure scientists, in whose lives there's room for nothing but science. Someone, someday, will tell us what we want to know about cancer. Someone will give us the cure for infantile paralysis. If I may venture a prediction, the men who are to achieve this feat are already born. Perhaps they are experienced scientists on the eve of their discovery. But it also may be that they are students in some medical school. These men may be here, in this room. All right, now, if I call your name, you will rise. Ralph Anderson?
Yes, sir.
Well, well. Gentlemen, Mr. Anderson obviously will specialize in surgery.
Thank you, sir.
Yes. Since nature has seen fit to give him hands suitable only for some pulling, he will no doubt pursue a career requiring to grace of delicacy and skill. You may sit down, Miss Anderson.
W. Bain?
Yes, sir.
Oh, ladies. And so you have decided to overcome the handicap of your sex and go out to do a man's work. Very well. No doubt you see yourself as some ministering angel, restoring health to those fortunate enough to feel your cool hand upon their fevered brows.
I still believe you are counting as a good doctor just because I'm a woman.
Well, you don't. Perhaps you suffer from faulty vision, Miss Lane. Sit down. John Wesley Bevan. Stand up, John Wesley. Let the congregation see you.
Yes, sir.
The records indicate that you came from a righteous little college engaged in the manufacture of preachers.
That's right, sir.
Well, you will be interested to know we have a standing reward here for any dissection that proves the existence of a soul.
How much is the prize, sir?
I shall be glad to sign the check, Brother Bevan, and let you fill in the figures. As a son of faith, you doubtless believe in the hereafter.
Well, it's a theory, sir, that science hasn't yet disproved.
Science concerns itself with facts, not metaphysics. And you will find no interest here in a churchman's views on anatomy or pathology.
I can quite understand that, sir. Any more than a scientist's viewpoint would be of any interest on religion.
I trust, Brother Bevan, you will not be long in learning that rhetoric belongs in a pulpit, not the laboratory.
I had always supposed that, sir. Until now.
Quiet! If there's any more of this moronic laughter, I'll dismiss the class. All right, sit down. Alexander Claxton. Alexander Claxton!
For Pete's sake, Johnny, get your nose out of that microscope.
Oh, hi, Andy.
I've been looking all over for you.
I thought I'd be in the lab.
In case you haven't heard, Christmas vacation started today.
Yeah.
And you said you'd come home with me?
Andy, I just can't do it.
No, come on. I'll help you pack.
I can't leave. I've been waiting 5 days to find out how a piece of live tissue reacts to this dose of X-ray.
You have? I'll show you how live tissue reacts to roast turkey.
I'll take a rain check on that.
What are you trying to do, please, Forster? You couldn't impress that egomaniac with a Nobel Prize.
He's still the greatest surgeon in the world.
How can you say that after the beating you've taken? He's been riding you all term.
Go on, you'll miss your train.
Okay, Johnny. Sorry. I hope you and Forster have a dandy time together.
Where's Johnny?
Inside the microscope.
Oh, stick around. You might like to find out what happens when a person blows up spontaneously.
Forster, huh? You too. Well.
Oh, I'm so mad.
Back to the research, man. So long.
Is the matter not going on?
Of course not. Dr. Forster doesn't believe in holidays. He just slapped four of my anatomy drawings back in my face.
Well, what of it? If they're not right.
Look, Bob, I'm 23 years old. Maybe not good looking, but not too bad. And I haven't had a date or put on an evening dress or even danced in 4 months. Nothing that I could remotely enjoy. Now, well, why couldn't he wait till after the holidays for his stupid old drawings?
Hey, now wait a second. You don't have to cry about it.
Who's crying? Why, he couldn't make me cry. Oh, it's no use. Got a spare shoulder I could borrow.
Sure. Now, look, Winnie, it's just that...
Well. Your unselfish devotion to scientific labor, both of you, is most commendable. May I suggest that a bench in the park might offer better facilities for your present type of research. Get out of here.
Okay, I'll get out. You bet your boots I'll get out.
Hey, what are you doing?
Oh, you've got eyes, Brother Bevan. So far as I'm concerned, Lincoln just signed that proclamation. This slave's going out and celebrate her freedom. Come on, let you and I get stiff.
Well, Winnie, but I can't go.
You don't want to go?
You don't know how I want to go. But these experiments cost money. And in just about 42 minutes, something's going to happen in that test tube that I've been waiting a good many days to see.
I get it. Or do I? Well, how about a date for next Christmas?
Well.
Oh, do you realize there are 3 more Christmases before we get out of this reform school?
Yeah, that's the trouble. There's not enough time in 4 years. How can you learn what it's taken?
You're talking like he talks. Like Foster.
Am I? I didn't mean to. I'm just scared, Winnie. Scared that they'll hand me that diploma and I won't be ready to take it. It'll be here before we know it. Before we know it.
Mm-hmm. Following midterm examinations, the second-year medical students listed below have been placed on the honor roll. Alberto Fioretti, chemistry. Watson Shelby, materia medica. John Wesley Bevan, surgery and medicine. Joseph Morgan.
From Dr. Max Foster to all third-year medical students, from January 4th to 17th, all laboratory sessions will be in charge of John Wesley Bevan. Anyone failing to attend these sessions will be held accountable to the dean of the university.
Well, how do you like that? Bevan!
Well, why not? He's top man in the class. Foster had to choose.
Yeah, and Bevan's no different than Foster. He had a heart when he came here 3 years ago. It's gone now.
All work and no feeling. Foster's made a convert, all right. The pure science.
Commencement exercises, College of Surgery and Medicine, will be held June 3rd on Hadley campus. Principal speaker, Dr. William Cunningham, Carlisle Hospital, Shanghai. Gabriel Award for Best Scholastic Record, John Wesley Bevan. Valedictorian, Thomas Lee.
Yes, gentlemen. 35 years ago, when doctors received their diplomas, they didn't have to know so much. Still, the job we've done hasn't been too bad. I think that's been due to a power greater than our own. You'll learn something of that power sooner or later. It has nothing to do with science. It has everything to do with humanity. In your years here, you've worshipped at one shrine, science. That is as it should be.
Well, how do you feel, Dr. Anderson?
Never felt better, Dr. Bevan. How do you feel?
Fine, Doctor.
Then pipe down. I want to hear Cunningham.
Why, he's not a doctor. He's a missionary. And a pretty dull one at that.
By charge you, you cannot show the ills of a body and leave the soul in torment. And that's all the 35 years have taught me. And for what it's worth, I pass it on to you. Thank you, gentlemen, and good luck. Thank you, Dr. Cunningham. Now there remains the awarding of one special award. Dr. Max Foster. I am sure you will realize that the warm atmosphere of brotherly love engendered by Dr. Cunningham has nothing to do with the appointment I'm about to make. I'm asking John Wesley Bevan to hold forth in my laboratory for the coming year as my assistant. Do you accept, Dr. Bevan?
Yes, sir. Like you, I recognize the ship as more important than the crew. Thank you, sir.
Hey, Johnny.
Oh, hello, Andy.
Well, leaving for home today?
Yeah. What's your hurry?
Oh, got to see Foster. I'm starting already teaching summer classes.
I wanted to talk to you about that, Johnny.
Hmm?
Those kids, they're squawky. They'll take it from Foster because he's Foster, but they won't take it from you. You're too rough on them.
What do they want me to do? Hold their hands and tell them how wonderful they are? Nobody ever held mine.
Look, Johnny, these kids are human beings. They've come here to study and...
Let them study and stop the grousing. There isn't time for both.
Okay, I'll drop you a line, Johnny.
What's that? It's in Foster's office.
Come on, Andy. Sounds to me like somebody's getting murdered.
How do you feel now?
Well,
you okay?
Yeah, I'm all right. Where's Anderson?
Taking your sparring partner to his car. That must have hit Carpenter harder than I meant to. All right, what happened?
You know him, Carpenter?
Sure, you bounced him out of school last year, didn't you?
Certainly, I threw him out. But what was he? A football player who blows a year about his tailor and then comes back to beat me up.
Didn't do a bad job, did he?
I don't like your joke, Bevan.
Trying to press charges?
No. They should to protect society. If I kept Carpenter from being a doctor, that was one crime against society he was able to prevent. No, I want this thing kept quiet, Bevan.
Yes, it might give other students some ideas. Nauseated?
Yes, a little.
Want to throw up or lie down?
I'll just sit down.
You know, you've had a good-looking gun with you for a long time, if you don't mind my saying so.
Then why did you stop Carpenter?
So happens there are a lot of things you know that I don't. I got to get them out of you.
That's the most cold-blooded remark I've ever heard.
Knowing how you despise sentimentality, I'm flattered.
Yes, you're the first. Fortunately, I now have a use for you also. There's a case coming in here tomorrow. Some patient of Brother Cunningham's came from China with him.
What sort of a case?
A bullet wound in the right arm. Penetrated the medial aspect with seemingly no impairment of function. Understand?
Medial nerve?
Yes. A few months ago, a pain developed in the hand, not in the arm. An operation was performed, but no relief.
What happened? Adhesions liberated without uniting the nerve?
Yes, probably. Anyway, another operation is necessary.
Sounds as the nerve fibers have grown out producing an aroma.
Good. Good. Very good, Ellen. You'll operate at 10 o'clock.
Me?
Why not? Afraid you cannot do it?
No, I was only surprised you'd be willing to step aside.
Well, my fingers, look, when I fell.
Oh, I see. Why didn't you say something?
Well, just a sprain, but I can't operate.
And here, I'll tape it up. Better have an x-ray.
Well, no, I said it was just a sprain. And that's for Cunningham's patient, Bevan. Get it through that thick skull of yours that I'm interested in only one thing. Good surgery. Who performs it doesn't matter. Now tape up his fingers.
Oh, thanks. Good morning. I just wanted to,
Good morning.
Oh, I beg your pardon. I wasn't expecting to see a girl.
Where is Dr. Foster? Dr. Cunningham told me he was to operate.
Well, he hurt his finger just then. I'm afraid that he...
Oh, I see. It is you who will operate?
With your permission, of course. Dr. Forster didn't tell me that. I mean, that, well, a bullet wound, you know,
well,
I thought
that... Well, you're anesthetic, doctor. There's no need to talk your patient into unconsciousness. You are in good hands, Miss Hilton. I have explained to Dr. Cunningham about my automobile accident.
Oh, please. Please do not think me difficult. It is quite all right.
Then we'll proceed. Nurse, call surgery. Dr. Bevan will operate at 10 o'clock.
Your stuff will be right in, Miss Hilton.
Well, how's the arm?
The hand, it is much better. The arm, it is still very painful, Doctor.
Well, it's fine.
I'm glad it pleases you. I myself am not delighted. Won't you sit down?
Oh, thanks, but I'm afraid I haven't signed a visit.
But the pain, you have not told me why.
Well, your arm hurts simply because of the operation, but the hand is better because we removed the tumor from the nerve.
Oh, I see.
The bullet almost severed the nerve. You must have suffered terribly.
These days, there are many Chinese who suffer.
Chinese?
I am Chinese. Did you not know?
Oh, but your name, Audrey Hilton, your face. Are you joking?
On the contrary, Doctor. It is inside that the person is what it is. I was born in China, educated in China, and I did not leave there until a few months ago. Yes, I am Chinese.
But your parents?
American. They were killed when I was still young. My foster parents were Chinese. They are the only family I have ever known.
I hope I said nothing to offend you.
Oh, please, do not think of that.
Well, you're doing fine, Miss Hilton. Another week like the past, and then you'll be playing tennis.
An American sport I have not yet acquired. But already I have succumbed to fishing. Dr. Cunningham taught me.
Well, have you know, I was once the best hook and worm fisherman in the whole state of Wisconsin.
How long has that been?
Years ago.
You know, when you talk like that, you are a different person. For a little moment, you are not the stern Dr. Bevan. I think it will be a great relief to you when I can leave here. You regret even those few minutes that keep you from your work.
This is my work, part of it. Besides, I enjoy talking with you.
Excuse me, Dr. Bevan.
Yes?
Dr. Forster just called. There's an emergency at Kennebell General Hospital. He wants to know if you can leave tonight.
Tonight? Tell him I'll go. I'll see him in a few minutes.
Yes, sir. Centerville? That is not far from the Cunningham Street.
You'll be staying with them when you leave here?
Yes. I knew them many years in China. They are so kind to me. They have a wonderful place in the mountains. There is good fishing there, Doctor.
Yes, I guess there is. Well, I'll see you when I get back from Centerville. Goodbye, Miss Hilton.
Goodbye, Doctor.
Centerville General Hospital. One moment, please. Dr. Spencer, hold the wire, please. Centerville General Hospital. Oh, Dr. Bevan.
Yes?
Dr. Forster's been calling you, sir. Shall I try to get in?
Oh, please. Can I take it here in the lobby?
Yes, Doctor.
Hello, Bevan. I heard you were here.
Dr. Cunningham.
Eating?
Oh, just about emergency last night for Dr. Forster.
Lucky I caught you. I can't tell you how grateful I am. That was a wonderful job you did on Audrey's arm.
Audrey seen her?
I was down there yesterday.
I'm sorry I missed you.
I stopped by here to see if you couldn't come up to the lake.
Well, thanks a lot.
Bass are biting now, and I hear you rather fancy yourself a fisherman.
I sure do, but I've got to get right back. There are quite a few cases, and then I've got my classes. Sorry, Doc.
I'm sorry, too. Audrey will be very disappointed. She hoped to see you at the lake.
Oh, but she's still in the hospital.
Oh, no. Forster sent her home yesterday. That's why I went down there.
Oh, he did, huh?
Yes, he seemed to think she might have left before this.
Well, that's very interesting. What are you so bait up at the lake, Doctor?
Well, to tell you the truth...
Dr. Bevan.
Yes?
I have Dr. Forster on the phone.
Yeah, and you can have him.
What did he say, sir?
Tell Dr. Foster you're very sorry, but I just left town.
You left town?
Yeah, I've gone fishing.
Act two of The Disputed Passage will continue in a moment. Now, here's Libby Collins.
One of my friends said the other day, Libby, what makes a man fall in love with a woman and then stay in love? Well, a lot of girls are asking that question these days. The answer isn't easy, because love is made up of a lot of little things. But of one thing I'm sure, one great compelling quality is daintiness. Think about that for a minute. Isn't it true that girls you know who are always dainty are usually the ones who have good times? Daintiness attracts a man and holds him. Daintiness is such an easy thing to acquire, too, and easy to keep. Lux Flakes do a wonderful job of whisking away the date perspiration from under things, leaving sweet and fresh. And Lux is so safe for your pretty things. It's mild and gentle, won't harm the nicest colors of fabric. Just as safe as water alone. Why, do you know a famous laboratory made actual color measurements? They found that undies washed the Lux way stay color fresh 3 times longer. Those washed with a strong soap, too hot water, and handled roughly look drab and old very soon. You wouldn't think girls would abuse undies that way these days, would you? If you want to keep your undies lovely longer, start luxing them tonight and do it every night. Then you'll know they'll always be fresh and dainty and keep their lovely new look longer.
Now, Brian Ahern returns to the microphone. Act two of Disputed Passage, starring Alan Ladd as John, Akin Tamiroff as Dr. Foster, and Ann Richard as Audrey. For almost a week, John Bevan has lost himself in another world. A lazy world of freedom and quiet beauty and good fishing. As he walks with Dr. Cunningham back to the lodge, the conversation drifts around to the old doctor's other guest, Audrey Hilton.
By the way, how did she get that bullet arm in the first place?
Audrey hasn't told you?
No.
Her home was in the interior of China. When the Japs came through, well, I guess Audrey was lucky at that. She's alive. She told you nothing of her background?
You mean about China?
Yeah.
She's no more Chinese than my Aunt Minnie.
Audrey thinks of herself as Chinese, and well, that makes her Chinese.
She's an American. You've known her long?
Well, since she was a child. Every year or so, I'd visit her home, her foster parents' home. They're all gone now, the old people and their children. Massacred. Can't blame her for wanting to return. She wants to help.
Return?
Yeah. She didn't come to the States just for an operation. She's raising funds for China.
Oh, I see.
Well, here we are. Let me have those fish of yours. My turn.
But I've been away from this sort of thing so long, Audrey. It's hard for me to realize it exists beyond hardware store calendars.
What is this?
Or things like this. A lake in the moonlight. Great tall pines. Fast jumping. The works.
John, that telegram. What did Dr. Foster want?
Me? Well, I'll wait Sunday night. You know, I haven't thanked you for getting Dr. Cunningham to ask me here.
I was surprised. I did not think you would come.
You think I'm just a machine, don't you?
I think you made the cup one.
There is a wall around me. It's because I deliberately built it.
You or Dr. Foster?
He started it the first day when I came to his class. And later when I saw him work and I thought I had never seen anything so beautiful in my life.
So you decided to be just like him?
I hated Foster as a person. In some ways I still do, but what he stands for, that's different. Well, I swore that nothing would interfere ever with what he taught me to go after.
That explains so much.
How do you know what I'm talking about?
Oh, but I do. That's why we were drawn together. I do have a warrant. But not of my own choosing. That is why we can be friends.
Audrey.
Yes?
What you said just now about our being drawn together.
I should not have said that.
I'm glad you did. I want to ask you something.
You may ask me anything.
I want to kiss you. You wouldn't mind?
No.
My technique, it's pretty amateurish, isn't it? Audrey, what's wrong?
Nothing.
Well, of course, there is. I acted like a kid.
No. But you will soon forget because you are seeking to avoid life. I shall remember because I am lonely and seeking to enter into it.
Do you think that by accepting the unworthy friendship of a miserable doctor, you might feel less lonely?
I am sure of it. Provided the honorable friend of Lan Ying would not find her a nuisance.
Lan Ying?
My Chinese name. Sometimes I get so hungry to hear the sound of it.
Lan Ying?
Please. You will go back to your world and I to mine. But we shall be friends forever. Is it not so?
I hope so, Lan.
What time is it?
What? What? Time? Oh, it's a little after 9. Why?
Because we must go back now. I am leaving tonight.
What are you talking about?
I am going to New York and to Washington.
Well, every now and then I think I understand you, and then up comes something like this. Why didn't you tell me you were late?
Please. I also have my work to do. In my little way, I do what I can for the Chinese people.
I see.
Let us walk back now.
Sorry I'm late. I stopped in town to call Forster.
Audrey, get off all right?
Mm-hmm.
Ma's gone to bed. Thought I'd have a last pipe out here on the porch. Sit down.
Thanks. I'll be going back myself in the morning, Doctor.
Not very flattering. The minute Audrey's gone...
Well, I can't say that I won't miss her.
It's Forster, huh?
Yes, I'm afraid I let him down running off here like I did.
That's nonsense. You should have known Max when he was young. We lived together in Vienna. We had a lot of fun. A lot of fun.
Fun?
Yeah.
Him?
He was the happy-go-luckiest fellow you ever met. And so she died. Elsa.
Elsa?
They were engaged. He went completely to pieces when she died. Nothing but a bad appendix, but doctors didn't know then what they know today. She was dead in 2 days. That's why Max came to America.
Foster in love. I didn't think you'd be so human.
You don't suppose people are born that way, do you? Max has never changed. No, I'm afraid he never will. Never.
Well, Brother Bevins, I hope you enjoyed your fishing trip.
Very much, thanks.
I'm surprised that a great humanitarian like Cunningham would indulge in such a cruel pastime as fishing. Or does he draw the line at the sole of a pickerel?
I don't know, sir. We were fishing for bass.
Now that you've had your little outing, you might get around to reporting on that case at Centerville. Petrol?
Yes, except the man will never walk again.
That was to be expected.
I spoke to the superintendent about finding him a job in the hospital.
Why? What business is that of yours?
None. I just felt like doing it.
You mean that Cunningham impressed upon your mushy mind the notion that social uplift is more important than surgery, hmm?
As a matter of fact, we did talk about the case.
Mm-hmm. Well, it may interest you to know that we're to have his noble influence here, too. Yes, he's been asked to lecture for the next term.
Oh, that's fine. Now, if you don't mind, I have a class of new pupils.
Go ahead, go ahead. Feed them on milk and water. Tell them what noble little knights they are. Yes, yes, soften them up for Cunningham. Tell them to be stewards of good teeth and inferior doctors.
You'll find my classes conducted as they should be. When they're not, you can always have me fired. Hello? Hello?
You called the Washington Register.
Thanks. Hello, Audrey? Oh, no, nothing, except I want to see you. I've been trying to reach you all week, Audrey. Dr. Cunningham said you're leaving for China.
Yes, John, soon. I have been thinking, and I must go.
Well, I've been thinking, too, Audrey, and I have to talk.
You cannot come to Washington?
Well, the hospital's pretty full. I don't know when I could.
Oh, would you like me to come to you? I could stop off, if that would be agreeable.
Oh, nothing would be more agreeable.
It will be several days yet. I will send you a telegram.
Oh, that's wonderful, Audrey. I'll be waiting. I realize what an imposition this is, Abbott. Now, if you feel at all uncomfortable...
Please, Professor, it is a great honor for you humble student to cook the dinner.
Well, what about the dinner? Is it going to be okay?
Oh, the dinner will be excellent if the professor's nose will permit him to eat it.
Pretty smart, aren't you, Abbott?
Oh, someday, perhaps. Not now.
Look, where do Chinese like you get the name of Andrew Abbott?
In your classes, the students are seated alphabetically, sir. The A's nearest the professor. The Chinese like to be close to the fountain of wisdom. Also,
yes?
Being close, the tendency is to be called on first for answers. I have observed that if the first student answers incorrectly, the professor is not as furious as when the third person fails. That is why I am Andrew Abbott, sir. Now, if I may retire to your kitchen, sir, I suggest you welcome your guests.
Mm-hmm.
the Chinese dinner, John. You see, now I am homesick.
You like it?
It was perfect. But you did not tell me you had a Chinese cook.
One of my students, he volunteered to help me out.
How is he called?
Andrew Abbott. But if you didn't like his cooking, I was going to change his name to Tibisco.
Tibisco?
This is a private joke between Abbott and me. You surprised me too, aren't you?
Did I?
Mm-hmm. The clothes you're wearing.
This is how I dressed in China. And since you are the person with whom I'm most comfortable, I wanted to dress in the clothes in which I am most myself.
Thank you. Forgive me if I say that, but you're beautiful. You don't know what it means to me to have you here.
John, at dinner, you started to tell me about Dr. Foster.
Oh, yes. Well, it wasn't until Dr. Cunningham told me about his fiancée died that I realized what a fool I'd been. There's really no conflict between science and life. It was Forster's bitterness that deceived me. He was just trying to alibi his own frustrations. Thanks to you, I see that now.
I'm glad you feel more kindly toward the world.
Well, I'm not thinking of the world. I'm thinking of us.
You have been thinking of others, too. Dr. Cunningham wrote me what you did for that man in Centerville, the one who cannot walk.
Audrey, don't you see? That's all you're doing. 6 months ago, I wouldn't have bothered my head about that man.
Oh, but you would if you had known.
Yes, I had known. You and been in love.
No, do not say that.
Oh, I must say it. I fought against it to start, and quite suddenly I knew that was my salvation. I want you here always. I want to marry you.
No, that cannot be, and you must realize that. Our lives are so completely foreign, completely different. Do you remember, John? I once told you I, too, had a wall that kept me from you.
What is it?
A promise. A solemn promise fulfilled.
If you'd only tell me, maybe I could...
No, I cannot tell you. It is my own problem, and I have to work it out myself.
In China?
I thought so when I came here tonight. But perhaps not. I think I shall return again to Washington.
But how long will it... I'm sorry, excuse me, please.
Hello? Hello? Yes, this is Bevan. Yeah, I see. Blood count? Why did you wait? All right, get him in the search. He'll be right over.
I see, dear. That's what you like to be. I've got to leave, Audrey. Hospital. Will you wait for me?
No, but I should like to stay here until it is time to go.
You go back to Washington?
Yes. But one promise I will give you. If I ever do come back here, it will be to stay.
Goodbye, darling. For a little while.
For a little while, yes. I too hope so.
The ambassador will see you now, Miss Hilton.
Thank you.
Come in, please.
It is good of you to see me, Excellency.
I'm happy to express my gratitude for your great accomplishment.
Excellency, it has been successful.
Yes, the money China so desperately needs is being loaned to us. Your work is largely responsible. Shen Ling would have been very proud of his foster daughter.
You make it very difficult for me to ask the question that has brought me here.
I can help you?
Yes, because it has to do with Shen Ling. It brings back the picture of how I last saw him and his family. After the Japanese went through, I found them in the doorway, what remained of them. As I stood there, I made a vow that so long as I had life, that life would be devoted to repaying the debt I owed to them. And now I come to ask you if that debt has been discharged. I must be sure that I have fulfilled my promise to him.
Your debt is discharged many times over. Your promise is fulfilled.
Thank you.
I knew what was in your mind when you were announced as Miss Hilton instead of Lan Yin. And that is as it should be. You realize at last that you are an American.
Yes, for the first time.
And I hope he is a very nice young man.
How did you know?
What else could call you back to where you belong?
Yes. He is a very nice young man.
Hello, Max.
Come in, Cunningham. Come in.
Seen Bevan today?
And this morning?
You know, that boy is very fond of you.
Bevan? Bevan is fond of no one. He doesn't know what emotion is. And besides, I suppose you leave Bevan alone. We're getting along very well.
Actually, you're very fond of him, too.
Yes, promise.
Great promise. If nothing happens to hold him back.
Nothing will hold him back.
That's what I wanted to make sure of. It'd be a bitter blow if you turned against him.
Me? What are you trying to say?
He's going to be married.
He what?
Yes, he called me a little while ago. Wants us to have dinner with him tomorrow night. Audrey Hilton will be back from Washington in the morning.
So that's it. That's it. I knew he'd been seeing the girl, but I had no idea she'd be such a stupid...
Now, just a minute.
I know. You think it is wonderful.
Of course I do.
Yeah, of course you do. What difference does it make if the world loses a potentially great scientist so long as he's happy? Devon needs at least 5 more years of training.
What makes you think he won't get it?
With a wife? He'll be out grubbing for money.
You're wrong, Max. He'll work harder than ever. A man doesn't always get a chance at real happiness. You of all people should know that.
And you should know to mind your own business. Now let me alone.
Come in. Ah, it's good to see you, Dr. Foster.
Forgive me for coming to your hotel, but I wanted to see you alone.
I thought John would be with you. When I called from the station...
You were detained for a little while at the hospital. Miss Hilton, I came in hope that I need to be frank with you.
If you were granted me the same privilege, Doctor.
Yes. Yes, it's agreed. I understand you plan to marry John Bevan.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And you realize, I suppose, that you are ruining a brilliant career, possibly one of the greatest.
I know you're serious, and so does John. We do not believe them. Oh, I wish you could trust me. I will not hurt him nor his career.
You have already hurt him.
But it is not true. How could I?
And the only way that matters is work. It has fallen off miserably since you first came here.
There is no reason
for
that.
There is every reason, Miss Hilton. No man can concentrate when his mind is beset with doubts, anxieties.
Doubts? But he has no doubts,
sir. Think, Miss Hilton. He is a man who chose a path for himself because he thought it would lead to a definite goal. Now, if you were in his position and you abandoned that path, wouldn't you be worried, fearful that you had done the wrong thing?
Yes. That I can understand.
I came here not to influence you, but to make certain things clear which perhaps you have not understood. The decision must be yours.
Mine.
No, yours.
And his.
Yours only. He had made 2 promises. One to himself and the other to you. And he will break the first before he breaks the second, for he thinks then he hurts only himself. But you and I, realizing what he could make
of it... If you don't mind, Doctor, I think you have told me enough.
You are an intelligent woman, Miss Hilton. I beg you to think it over. Good day.
And hold yourself, John. She said she'd be here and she will.
So why did she check into that hotel and an hour later check out?
Because she's probably coming here to your place.
Oh, I should have met that train. The Forster gave me such a stack of work that I...
That's probably Audrey now.
John Bevan?
Yes?
Telegram, sir.
Oh, thanks.
Bad news?
We must follow our separate paths. You to your goal. I to mine. Goodbye. It's signed, Lanyon.
We pause now for station identification. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System. In just a moment, our stars will return in Act 3 of Disputed Passage. Now, I know all you ladies are used to pinching pennies, so here's a bright new penny. Suppose you tell me what you could do with it.
Not much. Maybe get a picture postcard.
Or the stamp to go on it.
I could weigh myself on the drugstore scale.
Or get a penny stick of chewing gum, if they had any.
That's not much, is it? But you can do something really worthwhile with that penny. You can start getting rid of dishpan hands.
For a penny?
For less than a penny.
How?
By using Lux Flakes for dishes. It costs less than a penny a day to change dishpan hands to Lux hands. Just change from strong soaps to gentle Lux for dishes. Once you do, your hands begin to lose that red, rough dishpan look, sometimes as soon as the second day. Before long, your hands are soft and smooth and lovely again. And without using any creams or lotions. Test proved it.
I knew Lux was kind to hands, but I had no idea that it would cost so little to use it for dishes.
Yes, Lux is really thrifty because it goes further. Ounce for ounce, Lux does up to twice as many dishes as any of 10 other leading soaps tested. Lux is a really inexpensive way to save your hands. So spend that penny to start changing dishpan hands to Lux hands. You can do it for less than a penny a day. Now, Brian Ahern returns to the microphone.
Act 3 of Disputed Passage, starring Alan Ladd as John, Akin Tamiroff as Dr. Forster, and Anne Richards as Audrey.
2 weeks have passed since Audrey Hilton's disappearance. Defeated and hurt, John Bevan has plunged into his work with even greater intensity than ever before. But his efforts show only an increasing mediocrity. And the first to notice it is Dr. Max Forster.
You sent for me?
Bevan, what in thunder's the matter with you?
All right, what is it you want?
I want you to get hold of yourself. Moping around like a sick calf. I'm getting fed up, Bevan.
Tell me what you want, and I'll do it. I don't have to listen to any of you.
Oh, you don't? Having straight, plain facts is a little too strong for you, is it? And I thought you had backbone. Well, I was wrong.
Well, but that's impossible. You couldn't make him.
I made one in you, and I admit it. The cold-blooded Dr. Bevan, the true scientist. Look at yourself. Sniveling pub. A face-to-face life. My heaven, that girl had more stuff in her.
Girl? What girl?
What girl? What girl do you suppose?
Look at me. She talked to me.
Take your hands off me.
Tell me why you got a chance. You gonna go away?
Yes. Yes, I talked to her. And she saw how stupid the whole thing was.
Oh, you swine, you cold-blooded little hypocrite. You talk about backbone. Do you think you're fooling me? You'd been married now if you'd had the chance, but she died, didn't she?
Bevan.
Just because you couldn't be happy, you don't want to see anyone else happy. That's why you're sitting on your little tin throne and trying to play God.
I did what was best for you. You are throwing away your life.
That's a lie. With her, I'll do everything I ever wanted to be, including a better man than you, because I'll know something you'll never know. I'll know what's inside of people besides blood and bones and nerves. I'll know the thing inside them that really matters.
Come back here. I'm not through with you.
Well, that's too bad, Dr. Forster, because I'm through with you. I've been your stooge, done your work, taken your abuse, but now I'm free. And I'm clear now.
And where do you think you're going?
To find her.
Save yourself the trouble, Brother Bevan. The Hilton girl has gone back to China.
All right, then I'll go to China.
I don't want to sound discouraging, Doctor, but I'm afraid you'll be wasting your time.
I came to China to find her. I'm not giving it up now.
These are war times. All communication with the interior is destroyed. And if you should reach Shenzhen, Miss Hilton may be 1,000 miles away.
A search this far? Can you give me what papers I need?
I'll get them. Doctor, the Chinese have an ammunition depot at Shenzhen. That means constant bombing from the depth. It's very risky.
She went through, didn't she?
Very well. I'll arrange for your horses and guides. You can plan to leave tomorrow.
Before the bombers came, Doctor, this was the village we called Shenzhen.
Slaughterhouse. It's like a nightmare.
Perhaps we do better not to stop.
I got the rest of the horses, tell you, men. Where's this place? Hey, what is it?
I do not know. I...
Monsieur!
Yes?
You will pardon my amazement, monsieur, but I did not expect to see a white man.
Oh, can I get food for these horses?
And for yourself, monsieur. The hospital here is at your disposal.
Hospital? Well, where's the doctor?
Permit me, such as I am. My name is Lafayette.
Your arm?
The air raid. But I was fortunate, only a fracture.
Well, if you'd care to have me look at it, I'm also a doctor.
A doctor? Oh, come in, monsieur. I beg you to come in. I have 40 wounded inside.
And you attempt to handle all these patients yourself?
Well, there's little choice. But I have 2 good nurses, Chinese. Thank you for looking at the old woman.
She'll be all right in a few days.
Monsieur, there's a child, a little girl.
I'm sorry. I haven't time. I have to push on.
Yes, yes, I understand. I regret I cannot help you, but I have not heard of the girl you seek.
Maybe if I come back this way, I can stay longer.
Yes, yes, of course.
Let's see you. It's a few minutes more, won't matter. Show me the child.
This one, monsieur. Her leg. We have not had time. And this arm of mine.
Hey, let me see.
Yes, monsieur. In 4 places, as best I can tell. I have no more x-ray.
Tell my guys to unsaddle the horse, I'll stay.
Where's Ethan, doctor? Hurry, will you?
The boy was hemorrhaging.
You can take off your gown, doctor.
What do you mean?
The boy died an hour ago.
Oh.
Come inside. You must lie down. You have not stopped for 15 hours. Come. In here.
Those poor, helpless people. If I could only make them understand.
Oh, but you do. Your tone reassures them as much as words could. Monsieur, I am much interested in your technique. In all my experience, I have seen but one other man who uses instruments as you do.
Oh?
Yes, at the Sorbonne in Paris. I won't study there. The great Forster.
A few weeks ago, I was the assistant of the great Forster.
Monsieur, you are joking.
No.
Nobody jokes about Forster.
Listen.
Plane.
Yes, Doctor. Planes and bombs.
Well, they wouldn't bomb here again.
I'm afraid they will. They are trying to destroy an ammunition dump. They missed it yesterday. We've got to remove our faces, Doctor. There's a bomb shelter in the way. Hurry, please.
This is Dr. Foster. What is it?
Cablegram for you, Doctor.
Cablegram.
From China, Guangxi province.
Read it. Read it.
John Bevan, wounded air raid. Shrapnel embedded in brain. Holds no hope. It is signed, Basil Le Perrier. Mission hostile, Shandine.
I think, Thank you. Thank you. Nurse!
Yes, Doctor.
Find out where Shandine is in China and the quickest way I can get there. I must get immediate reservations. Don't stand there. Hurry!
Well, you got here at all, Dr. Forster. But you cannot expect to do the impossible, even under the best conditions.
No one is dying, but he's still alive. We must do what must be done.
Operate here?
Yes, of course.
Well, there's a Chinese doctor with him now, Dr. Chong. He can help you more than I. My arm.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. But you'll stand by. I may need you for transfusion. Now get your surgery ready.
Yes.
The girl, Miss Hilton. Did Devon find her?
No. In his delirium before the coma, he asked for her so many times. We are trying to locate her.
Do you know where she is?
Only rumors. A village 100 miles up the river. There is talk of a white girl who drives an ambulance. A white girl with a Chinese name.
Stand for her.
We have already. Perhaps she is the one he...
We're wasting time. Now, start anesthetics. I'll be right in.
First evening, Doctor. Arrestation 12.
Let me hear?
Yes.
Look. The course of the shrapnel. You see, it has penetrated the frontal lobe. We shall find it above the fissure of our lungs.
There is nothing we can do?
Nothing? Why, we can remove the pressure.
The patients inside, they are praying for
them. Let them pray to take their minds off of themselves. Light, light, where is more light here? If you were Bevan, doctor, would you want prayers or my skill?
I would rather not answer that.
Where are retractors? Retractors! Retractors!
Hurry, Doctor. You must hurry.
Now stop your stupid talk. My forehead. Wipe my forehead!
The pulse becomes weaker, Doctor.
Transfusion. That's the end.
We are prepared. Fighting. C'est en moi.
30 minutes more. Perhaps less.
Less?
Yes, he may die. Pulse? The pressure?
The pulse is stronger, Doctor. Respiration 18.
Sponges, nurse. Bandages. The operation is finished. It should have started 2 early hours ago. The pressure was lifted.
There is still hope, Doctor. He holds his own.
I tell you, I cannot understand it.
You must not horror yourself. You operated under tremendous difficulties. In your own surgery?
No, that's got nothing to do with it. The operation itself could not have been more successful no matter where it was performed. Whatever these two hands can do, they have done. There he lies, and I am helpless.
Yes. All that science can do has been done. Nothing can help Dr. Bevan now except himself.
Himself? What does that mean? What can Bevan do? He's never come out of the coma.
There comes a time when we are all helpless, we men of medicine. When nothing can help except something inside the patient, the will to live. If there were but some way to strike a spark within you.
Save your breath, please. I have no time to listen to talk of mystic powers.
Oh, no. I speak of nothing strange, monsieur. I speak only of his soul.
Doctor, do you hear? The planes again.
Planes? Planes. We can't move him. Get him out of the quick furniture. Anything that might protect him.
Wait. It comes from the west. The Japanese never come from the west. Chong, look. It is a tiny plane. It is landing.
A woman gets out. A woman.
What woman?
She's coming to us, gentlemen. It is Audrey Hilton.
But he wakened during the night. He knew me then. I'm sure he knew me.
Perhaps Miss Hilton had the hope so.
Where's the white? He lies there as if you... John, I am here. I am here to stay. Please don't leave me now. Please.
Miss Hilton.
Can't you hear me, darling? please come back to me. It is only a little wish.
His eyes. He's opening his eyes.
John.
They close again. Still the coma.
Yes. The Hilton, there's really nothing you can do. You should get some rest.
I will stay. He may wake. He may wake.
How is he?
He has not moved.
This blanket.
The John McCurry. She put it about you.
Audrey. You? Audrey. Audrey.
Look, he wrote to his doctor.
Stand aside.
Audrey. Audrey, don't go.
No, my dear. I will stay always.
God. God in his infinite mercy.
Yes, John. Don't try to talk.
John.
What?
What?
No, you're too soon. Not yet.
John. So, John. What?
Yes, my darling. The sun will be here when you wake. The sun and I.
What do I did? It was not enough.
What do you say? Look at him.
The shock was too much for any human.
But he's breathing. It's irregular.
Sometimes I think that. But yeah. He's sitting. In his face, the color returns. Give away color.
Thank God.
Oh,
thank God.
Audrey. Come here.
You're safe, sister.
No. Not I. No sign. It was something beyond. Audrey, I don't know if you can forgive me, either of you. But what I did for you both, I thought it was for the best. I wanted him to be as great as he knew he could be. But if I could believe that.
I believe.
I thought I had given him the greatest strength any man could know. Silence. But I have seen something even greater. Surely there is a God in the heavens where I have seen. Yes, I have seen his miracle.
Our stars will be back for a curtain call in just a moment. Now, here's Sally.
With a history lesson.
History, Sally?
Mm-hmm, stocking history. Did you know that men wore the first really modern stockings?
No, when was that?
Oh, back in the 1500s. And just guess who started it? King Henry VIII. They were hand-knitted for him in Spain.
What did people wear before that?
Oh, stockings made of wool or velvet cloth, cut to the shape of the foot and leg, and then seamed up the back. For years, Henry was the only person who had knit ones.
I wonder if he ever got run.
Probably. After all, that was about 4 centuries before Lux Flakes were invented.
No wonder new stockings were a luxury.
But now any woman can have better and surer stockings than King Henry did.
And thanks to Lux, can keep them lovely a long time. Gentle Lux care saves elasticity, so stockings give under strain instead of popping into runs so easily. They fit better, too. Don't risk cake soap rubbing or strong soap. Strain tests show these things make runs come much sooner. Stockings washed with mild Lux Flakes last twice as long. And that's just like getting an extra pair of stockings every time you buy a pair. Lux care is thrifty. Now, back to Brian Ahern and our stars.
Well, I'm sure we're all grateful to Alan Ladd, that Tim Kamiroff, and Ann Richards for their excellent presentation of tonight's play. And I must confess that after 15 appearances as an actor on Lux, it was sort of fun to sit on the sidelines for a change and watch.
Oh, you deserve it, Brian. I hear you just got back from overseas. How long were you away?
About 7 months, Alan. I went all through Italy, France, and Holland, and even into Germany. As a matter of fact, just about a month ago, I was playing for the troops of General Simpson's 9th Army, who are now making this magnificent drive to the Rhine.
It must have been a wonderful experience.
I think it was the greatest of my life, again. A little rugged at times, perhaps, but it was a real privilege to entertain those boys. And I'm sure you and Alan have found in your work at the hospitals and camps. I understand that Alan's just returned from a 3-month tour.
That's right. And as you say, it's a great privilege to entertain those men.
Well, I'm sure we're all glad to be back, if only to welcome such a delightful newcomer to this stage as Miss Ann Richards.
Thank you, Mr. Holmes.
You gave me a charming leading lady, Brian. I can readily see why she's Australia's favorite screen star.
Well, I think she'll be one of America's favorites, too, when she's seen in the new picture of Hal Wallace.
Yes, in love letters and his letter perfect.
Well, what have you been doing at Paramount, Akin?
Me? Watching Alan Ladd.
Watching Alan? What, with Ann Richards on the lot?
Well, she's been watching Alan, too. Yes, you see, we're both interested in horses.
Oh, I see. And Alan sort of reminds you...
Well, I think Kim is talking about the picture I was making for him. It has a lot to do with horses and horse racing.
Yes, with all the tracks closed, Paramount was the only place where you could spend a day at the races.
Well, if you're interested in riding, Anne, you should have seen Akim at Pablo in For Whom the Bell Tolls.
I did. And does he ride a horse?
Yes, I never thought anything filled with hay would be so hard.
What play are you doing next week, Brian?
Well, for next Monday night, we have an especially delightful play. The RKO comedy success, The Devil and Miss Jones. And our stars are Charles Lawton, Linda Darnell, and Dennis O'Keefe. It's the story of a wealthy executive who goes to work for his own firm as a lowly employee and discovers not only how the other, how they play and think and love. A discovery that brings him long missed happiness.
Sounds like great entertainment, Brian. Good night.
Good night.
Good night. I hope we meet again. Our sponsors, the makers of Lux Flakes, join me inviting you to be with us again next Monday night when the Lux Radio Theater presents Charles Lawton, Dennis O'Keefe, and Linda Darnell in The Devil and Miss Jones.
Housewives help America at war by saving those waste fats and greases from your kitchen. They're vitally important in the manufacture of essential war materials, which is why your butcher is prepared to give you 2 red ration points plus 4 cents for each pound. Our music was directed by Louis Silvers, and this is your announcer, John M. Kennedy, reminding you to tune in again next Monday night to hear The Devil and Miss Jones with Charles Lawton, Linda Darnell, and Dennis O'Keefe.
Hurry, hurry, hurry. Get in on Spry's sensational flower garden offer. The makers of Spry Shortening offer 8 packets of high vitality seeds that will give you masses of glorious flowers from spring till frost. Just send 15 cents with name and address to Aunt Jenny, Box 1200, Chicago, Illinois.
And be sure to listen in next Monday night to the Lux Radio Theater presentation of The Devil and Miss Jones with Charles Lawton, Dennis O'Keefe, and Linda Darnell. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.